نحمده ونصلي على رسوله الكريم أما بعد أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم جي بايو بينو اور بزرگو السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته This is Avi Dawji and this is The Big Picture broadcasting simultaneously on Radio Islam from Durban Studios and Radio Al Ansar So, how's it? to be locked up under the lockdown, eh? Wonderful, right? You bullies with the froze and the kids, so much to talk about, eh? Discussing this and that and the fro pretending to be interested. Hey, I tell you, ladies have a special talent, eh? They can multitask, answer the kids' questions, cut the onions, keep an eye on the milk on the stove doesn't boil over, all at the same time and still laugh heartily at your dry jokes. Too good, man, too good. So, just before Eid, the fro gave me the list of things to buy from Overport. I drove around and got everything except one thing. On the list was something called China grass. When I read the word China, I went ice cold. China? China grass? I don't know what that is. And can't we just use local grass, I thought. What's so special about grass from China? And who knows what could be crawling in that grass? Some tiny invisible thing like, you know what? but hey, I wasn't going to argue. I'll find it. A list is a list. That's it. Don't ask questions. So I searched all over, shop to shop, zero, nothing. And so, dear listeners, I had to make a big decision. It was going to be very traumatic. I had to go to that shop in Sparks Road to get the China grass. As you know, I avoided going to that shop for months. And so I put a big mask on, put a big topi on and dark glasses. Parked my car near the shop, got out ready to race in. No chance at all. The scream of a thousand sirens of ambulances and fire engines filled the air. Birds fell from the trees. Cars zigzagged on the road. People ran for their lives. Yes, yes, my dear listeners, it was that human vuvuzela. Harima Khala. Dawji! Hey, Dawji! Meow! Come here! Like a zombie, I walked up to a gate. But before I could open the gate, leading into a garden, she called to me from the veranda.
Just wait, Dawji. Long time I didn't see you. Someone told me you had heart attack or stroke. I thought you already gone upstairs. I was going to cook kheer. Then my nephew, Imran, told me you gone to see some lights overseas or something. But you want to go see lights overseas? Yeah, in West Street, Christmas lights are so nice, man.
I really didn't know what to answer and just stood at the gate. Then she said,
Where are you from, Dawji?
I answered, Ispingo, Khala.
She said, No. Where are your grandfather from? Which gam?
I thought this was going to be a long conversation. And it was late already and the fro must be waiting to plant that grass or whatever it is. So I answered, Khala, my grandfather comes from Gala. She said,
Tehu, what is Gala?
I said, it is in Surat.
She said, oh, all right then. Open the gate and come.
I went to the veranda, made salam and asked how she was and whether she needed anything. But I was very curious as to why she wanted to know which gam I came from. So I asked her and the answer she gave me made me dizzy and cross-eyed. She said,
Dawji, one fella came to my house yesterday. I didn't know who he was. He had this big niqab thing on his face. I said, wait, don't open the gate. I asked him, which gam you from? He said, Colward. I said, hey, go from here, don't come inside. You know why, Dawji? Because Imran, my nephew, when he comes, he's always on his phone and he talks and talks about Colward this and Colward, how dangerous and all that. When I ask him, he laughs and says, Khala, watch out for Colbert. You old, it can kill you. Dawji, I'm so frightened. Why is this Colbert people doing all this? I sat there and looked at her. I scratched my head. I looked at her again. Then took my phone out of my pocket and put it to my ear. And then said, Khala, it's going to be iftar time just now. Ruksana is waiting for the naan. I'll tell you more next time. And I ran as fast as I could and got into my car. China grass can wait till next Ramadan, eh? Well, that was quite a traumatic experience. But of course, this virus has created a whole lot of trauma all around the world. Just a quick thank you to all those who sent birthday greetings and also called my dad on his 90th birthday on Wednesday. Jazakallah khair to all you caring people. Well, after the quarantine, he tested negative and is doing well, alhamdulillah. Right, this virus, COVID-19, has created lots of drama, lots of fear, lots of confusion, lots of contradictions. Someone says something and someone else says something else and say that this is nonsense, and lots of conspiracy theories, lots of lies and quack remedies. I really don't know who and what to believe anymore. I was reading the morning paper yesterday, and I think the weekly column by Shannon Ibrahim explained it all very well. Let me read to you a part of it. This is what she says. She says, my mother sent me an image on WhatsApp this week titled How to Kill COVID-19 with a picture of a woman throwing her television out of the window. At this point, I think many people share that sentiment, considering the constant barrage of information on the pandemic that dominates every newscast. My mother is also sick and tired of me telling her how to disinfect her groceries by wiping the packages with 70% alcohol sanitizer or using gloves to decant the contents into fresh Tupperwares or Ziploc bags. She says if she has to hear it one more time, she will simply stop talking to me, which is a bit of a problem seeing as she lives in Canada. But what her frustration says to me is that people are losing their trust in the media and literally switching off. While I also have my moments of being able to handle only so much COVID-19 coverage, the danger in switching off completely is that without the media, we would not receive the meaningful and important updates our government, health officials, and the World Health Organization are trying to convey to us in this time of crisis. Part of the general frustration is the politicization of the pandemic and the fact that much of the information emanating from the White House and so-called experts is incoherent, unreliable, and so confusing that we have decided it can't be trusted. Information presented on the pandemic is clearly not politically neutral and always appears to be spun, and it is often difficult to determine the agendas at play. Health officials seem to be constantly revising their opinions, and scientists are not giving us unambiguous guidance. 2 months ago, we were told that masks made no difference, but now we are not allowed to leave the house without a mask. I would much prefer to know that everyone is keeping as many of their droplets to themselves as possible by virtue of wearing a mask rather than projecting them in my direction. So that's just the first part of her article, Shannon Ibrahim. So there you are, my dear listener. Just like I was saying, confusion reigns. Lots of arguments. Let me say it again. The virus came unexpectedly and spread very fast, and people were bewildered and still are bewildered. Uncharted waters, trying to make sense of it. What's the right thing to do? Well, who knows? Damned if you do and damned if you don't. Keep the lockdown in place or lift the lockdown. So many questions and so many arguments, even among the experts, the scientists. And speaking about arguments, shoo, and yarr, and ish. Our guys really take the cake, eh? The whole bakery. Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, the ummah will see the sight of the moon dividing into two. Today, the sighting of the moon has divided the ummah into two parts. And now to the issue of the opening of the masjid saga. I made lots of du'as before I came onto this program so that people don't misunderstand. Let me say this.
mainly to cover my back so that I don't collect some unwelcome claps. I don't really know for certain who is right or wrong about all the debates that carry on about this or that aspect of Islam. I'm not a scholar, nor do I pretend to know very much. I don't take sides. I am ready to be corrected if I do have a view that's faulty. I have an open mind, which reminds me of when I said that once, a rotter said, "Yeah, you must be having an open mind. Your brain must have leaked out." I never spoke to that thinking character again. So, yes, I don't subscribe to any particular groups, viewpoint or position. And now to the latest announcement from President Cyril Ramaphosa. Churches, mosques, temples, synagogues will now be allowed to open. So, this opening of the masjid has opened up another hot debate as expected. Right. So let's go over to PE and the majlis. I can hear you all saying, "Whoa," and busy fastening your seat belts and putting your seats in the upright position. Well, oxygen mask may drop down suddenly any time now. Hey, relax. I have no intention of attracting any fancy titles like Zindiq or Juhula or Murtad or Munafiq, evil agent of Iblis, necroid-hearted, and this one here, Mutab Zabina. Yes, that's a heavy one there. Mutab Zabina. No, dear listeners, I am not going to be critical of the majlis, the position of the majlis. I'm simply going to state it. Well, to a large extent, he has been consistent that the masjid must be closed, right? The masjid, he has been consistent that the masjid must be open. I say to a large extent because there has been some little changes along the line. So, let's look at this from the beginning when the virus emerged. The majlis said that a mufti said that because the virus is contagious, one may read at home in small congregations. And, of course, the majlis said that this is a batil, stupid answer because it goes against what our Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "La adwa," disease is not contagious. Hence, this miscreant mufti has to therefore renew his iman and also his nikah because his fatwa is junk from the sewage drain. Of course, these are not my words. So, it follows then that those who believe and follow this miscreant mufti who said we must read at home, who follow his fatwa, must also renew their nikah. Right, so that was the comment of the majlis about this mufti who said we must read at home. Another instance of this is the Muslim Lawyers Association, the MLA, who at first simply called for the masjid to be open. So they were on the side of the majlis. Shortly thereafter, they wrote to the government asking for the opening under certain conditions. The majlis, as I said, is consistent. So the MLA got a clap. Let me read the words of the actual clap. Now, what happened to my mouse? Yeah. Okay, here it is. "It is an absolute imani imperative to understand that any belief or act voluntarily accepted or proposed, which is in negation or rejection of an imperative belief of Islam, is kufr. Kufr which nullifies iman, which in turn requires renewal of iman and renewal of nikah." Did you get that? Renewal of nikah. Right, so let's move away from cancelled nikahs and so on. As to any conditions that are attached, if the government allows the masjid to be open, according to the majlis, they should be rejected. And once again, I quote, our advice for the Muslim community, when the masajid are allowed to open, a host of haram Fong Kong conditions will be attached. It is better for the masajid to remain closed than to operate under satanic restraints. Satanic restraints. Yeah. I learned a new word, Fong Kong. Don't know what it meant, so I googled it and came up with this from the Urban Dictionary. It says, Fong Kong refers to something that is very obviously fake, plastic or non-believable. It can also be used to refer to something or someone that tries desperately hard to be cool but falls flat. This term has originated among South African youth and was used mostly back in 2000 up to 2002. Huh. Wow. The Molana has even learned local slang words, eh? I'm very impressed. And then we had the announcement by the government to open the masjid under certain conditions and restrictions. One of the conditions is that hand sanitizer should be used. And the masjid's response, the najasat of the sanitizer ridge considering of 70% alcohol renders the user impure. Napak. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, you get your hands sprayed, then go inside and wash your hands thoroughly, according to the majlis. But wait, isn't the wuzu area going to be closed? Ah, so that's a problem. So here's a slight shift that I told you about. Okay, you can go to the masjid, but if one of the masjid officials allows only 50 persons in, then that is unacceptable, right? If he's a Muslim, he's committing a very big crime there. So let me read that part to you. It says, multiple jamaats in the same masjid are haram only if the government enforces its unjust decree will it be permissible to have multiple jamaats. Right? So there's your direct quotation. So if a Muslim stops you there, he is committing a very... But if a policeman is counting and not allowing more than 50, then you have to accept as zulm, but you can comply. Let me read the relevant section. Right. Well, as I said, I already read that to you, multiple jamaats will be permissible under those conditions. Right. So there you have it. You can go, according to the majlis, you can go, get your hands sanitized as required, and then wash them once you are inside. And if a policeman stands entrance and says, sorry, bro, you are number 51, you have to wait with the next batch of 50, then you must comply. And go in and, as I said, wash off the sanitizers. So far, so good. What next? Well, if you see a jamaat forming with spaces between the musallis of about a meter or more, as Cyril Mahmoud declared, then you should not join it. You should not join it. Let me quote again. Should a true mu'min enter a masjid where the safs are formed in shaitani style, then do not join such a Hong Kong congregation of shayateen. Stand aside away from the devils and perform salat alone. Salat with a congregation of shayateen is not valid. The 1 or 2 meter spacing in the saf is haram. It will render the salat invalid. Therefore, if you enter a masjid and find clowns performing salat in this ludicrous manner, do not join such a congregation. These clowns do not constitute a valid jamaat for salat. Mm-hmm. Right, so there you have it. If you see a physical distancing jamaat, it's a Hong Kong jamaat. Oh, by the way, we heard that the person who is sick should not go to the masjid. Right, that's what we were told. That's why your temperature will be checked before you enter the masjid. Not so, says the majlis. Not so. He says here, it is imanically, I like that word, eh? nice. I've learned lots of nice words from the Majlis. It is imanically inconceivable to turn away even one elderly or one sick person from a masjid or an Eidgah. Masjid committees and personnel are not to conduct themselves as members of the Gestapo. They have no right whatsoever of acting like the oppressive police to shunt, kick and humiliate any Muslim. Right? Well, dear listeners, that is the position of the Majlis. I hope, inshallah, that I have portrayed it accurately. I certainly don't want to appear in the next edition with colorful language describing my character. So I hope I didn't misrepresent anything that the Majlis said. As I told you in the start, I'll be just providing cold facts. Okay, now let's look at the other side. Ooh, those who have welcomed the president's announcement that the masjid will be allowed to open under very strict conditions. Okay, now I've been thinking a lot about this. And again, just as I was not critical or judgmental of the position of the Majlis, yet I have some concerns, perhaps questions about some troublesome aspects of the proposed arrangements. If you don't raise questions about possible problems, if you ignore them, then you won't solve the problems, correct? Makes sense? Logical? Right? Rational? So again, I'm not going to be critical, but I am concerned about the mechanisms that will be put in place, the process that will be employed to deal with this new reality, especially allowing 50 at a time and other related aspects. But let me begin here. Let's say that a masjid has a system they decided upon on how to deal with this new situation of going to the masjid under these new restrictions. Let me be frank, or perhaps a better word would be realistic. Let me focus on the Jumu'ah Salah, because that's where the largest crowds congregate. In the, shall I say, upper class, the Lani areas, perhaps the information can reach many people about what mechanism is going to be used via WhatsApp groups, distribution of pamphlets or announcements on the radio. I am thinking of maybe the masjid in Isipingo Beach or Westville or La Mercy and so on. The more, elite areas. And certainly if a masjid generally takes about 100 persons, normally on a Friday, it would be an easy matter to make one jamaat of 50 after another, or maybe a classroom can be used simultaneously for both. So even a person was arriving uninformed about the new procedures, he will not be fed up upon hearing that he has to wait just a few minutes. But what about the very large masjid that takes hundreds of people and is located in perhaps the city center, like, let's say, the Jumu'ah Masjid in Grey Street, Durban? For the Friday Salah, they receive just around 2,000 musallis. So, as they say, do the maths. If you have 50 in a jamaat at each time, then you would have to have 40 jamaats. Okay? I have it on good authority that the new abridged Salah session on Friday will take about 15 minutes each. So, 40 jamaats times 15 minutes equals 600 minutes, which equals 10 hours. I hope I'm right. I did badly in arithmetic, as it was called in school in those days. 10 hours. But let's say that the masjid had three venues, say classrooms or the upstairs section where Salah could be done. Still, it would take about 3 hours to get all the musallis to complete the Jumu'ah Salah. Bear this in mind. We have a lot of foreigners Somalis, Nigerians, Ethiopians, and so on, who are working at various shops all over town and small factories and so on. They rush to the masjid. They have very little time, perhaps 30 minutes, to get back to work. They got no idea that there is some new mechanism in place at the masjid. All they heard was that the masjid is now allowed to operate. They pitch up and are told, sorry, all musallis supposed to have made wuzu at home and you have to wait your turn to enter. What do you think will happen? And outside the masjid, you have to make a line with social distancing of 2 meters. That line may finish off from Grey Street to the beachfront. I'm just kidding. So that's the first big dambal. People arriving in huge numbers and told to wait. Now to the next part. Before you enter, the temperature thing is pointed at your head. 37 degrees, you are okay, you can enter. What if you have the virus and you are asymptomatic? No symptoms showing. Then what? Next, hand gets sanitized. Okay, we understand that. Although I can imagine that shaking hands will take place when close buddies meet inside the masjid. I am sure that's going to happen. Right, now another big one. A register has to be filled in. According to government regulations, a register has to be filled in. Give your name, address and phone number. No problem with that. Doing that is very easy. What's the purpose of doing that? Well, just in case you go back home and the next day or two, or the whole COVID virus shows up, you get seriously sick. You are then expected to call the masjid and tell them that you are sick from the virus, and they will then contact the group of 50 you came in with, and that whole lot will go into quarantine. Question, will you call the keeper of the register if you were sick? Secondly, before you call him, you will have to first go for a test when you have some time, maybe time from time off from work or something like that. Thirdly, you will have to wait for the test results, which may take a few weeks, given that we just heard that there's a backlog of more than 100,000 who are waiting for the results for weeks and weeks. So therefore, logically, if you get your results after, say, 21 days or more, and it's positive, then you will call the register guy at the masjid and tell him, but wait, before you got your results, you already went 3 times for Jummah Salah already. The mind, senor, she boggles. Okay, let's leave that. Another condition that I read in the government document is that if, here's the actual words, and I'm reading from the government document, requires every person to report whether they suffer from any of the following symptoms such as body aches, loss of smell or loss of taste, nausea or vomiting, fatigue, weakness or tiredness. That's the regulation. So, if you admit to this, just before you enter, if you tell the guy, yes, you got this, you of course will be prevented from entering, according to the regulation. Now look here. The Mota came all the way to make Salah. You think he's going to say, yes, I have these symptoms, knowing that he won't be allowed to enter? He will commit the guna of speaking a lie so that he can get the sawab of making Salah in the masjid. Don't laugh, eh? Don't laugh. You know it's true. And here's a rule that will make you laugh. If the person enters and then is found to, this is according to the regulations. If the person enters and then is found to have these symptoms, well, I really don't know how they're going to make out, the mosque officials are going to make out, unless suddenly the chap has diarrhea or something. this is not a laughing matter. And again, I'm reading from the regulations. Immediately isolate the person and assists the person to make arrangements to be transported in a manner that does not place our other members of the public at risk for medical examination and testing. Right, stop and imagine this for a moment. A heavy smoker starts coughing uncontrollably for a few minutes. You rush up to him, mosque officials, tell him to accompany you, organize transport to his testing center. Yes, this is all I have to say. I'm not finished yet. You then have to assess the risk of trauma, of transmission from the coughing of this fella, the smoker, and disinfect the area and refer that person, refer all those persons who may be at risk for screening. So all those people who are around this heavy smoker, you have to disinfect. Did you get that, dear listeners? How are you going to assess the risk of the cough? And if you are going to disinfect the area after that, there goes another whole big place for 50 people to make salah. These are all in the regulations, my boot. Have to be followed. So, to the next one. The person who doesn't know about the social distancing regulation enters and sees people standing 1.5 meters apart. And of course, he is bewildered. He didn't know about all these things. Hey, what's happening here? And let me take this one step further. A few brothers decided, no. We're not going to do that. Majlis says we must stand shoulder to shoulder. And so they form their own line, shoulder to shoulder. What will the masjid officials do? Because regulations are being transgressed. Do they stop them? Hell, lots of shoving and clapping will take place. And I thought of something else. Regulations state that masks must stay on all the time. So what if one mota says, hey, no. My salah is not valid unless my forehead and nose touches the ground. And so he takes off his mask. Look, dear listeners, I can go on and on about what I see as a logistical nightmare. Logistical nightmare. I'm not looking for problems. The problems are there. They're not about complying with the regulations of Sharia, which scholars can sort out. This is about government regulations, about how we must conduct ourselves if we wish to make salah in the masjid. I'm raising this concern solely because I hope that masjid officials will take heed and grapple with these contentious matters. So far, I have seen a few ideas on social media, WhatsApp and so on, mechanisms to deal with this, something about giving out discs or using an app or something. But they don't take into account the nature of the people or the strictness of the regulations, making them wholly inadequate. Look, I may sound negative, but the intention is to inspire positive action, because the government clearly said, if you don't adhere to these regulations, you will be shut down. And finally, let me say this. I sincerely hope and earnestly pray that all my apprehension is baseless and misplaced, and come that day, next Juma, everything will go as smooth as clockwork, and all the ducks will be perfectly in a row, inshallah. That is my dua. The other day I said something, well, half jokingly, that the majlis says that if these government restrictions are placed in attending the masjid, then it's better for the masjid to remain closed, as we cannot be controlled by kuffar regulations. And if UKSA finds that it is very difficult to meet all the logistical requirements, the 50 people, the social distancing, the testing, etc., then they should also abandon the idea of opening the masjid. This is what I told one of my friends. So, that in effect would mean that the majlis and UKSA will be on the same page at last. No more division and fighting. I'm laughing very nervously here. So, dear listeners, I had to tackle the subject. It was like gas building up on my chest. Uncomfortable. I had to get it out. So, these are my views. You may agree or disagree. No problem, Habibi. No problem. I didn't criticize either side of the divide. Just presented bare facts. So, don't get cross, okay? Chill and think carefully about what I said. Don't hear what I didn't say. Okay, Mamu? All right? Are we clear? Now, I don't know whether I should say this. I was wondering, I was debating with myself. It's just another joke. Okay, lights. Did you get that, Mota? Just some light stuff. This is what I said to my friend Idris. He always calls me every day to find out how I'm keeping, seeing that the travel business is stone dead. Alas, as I told you previously, since the lockdown, the highlight of my day is when my Frau Ruxana says that she needs Danya. So, I jump into my car and take a drive to the supermarket to buy it. Sometimes I even hide the tea bags just so that I can go out and get some. So I told Idris that I thought of a new business idea, a new venture, since tourism is dead. I'm going to book all the wedding venues in Durban. Idris was puzzled and asked, why? I said, Idris, in view of the fact that many nikahs will be broken if people follow the rules of social distancing in the masjid according to one ruling. So, if the marriages have to be restored, the fros will want the whole works once again. The reception, the stay, the chow, the decor, everything. Yes, sir, say, I'm going to be rich. Idris laughed and said, I like it. Right, so still on the subject of fros, how are you getting along, eh, at home, Mota? Not irritating her? No arguments now that you are stuck? No sports, no escapes, no nothing? But let me give you some perfectly sound advice, Habibi. Listen carefully. It's a matter of life and death. When the arguments get really hot, there is one thing you must never say. Never, ever say. And this is it. My mother was right about you. And ish. The sky will fall down on your head, Brazo. Afat. Khalas. The fight will carry on for another 20 years. Hey, hey. And what else your mother said? Hey, tell me now. So, remember, never to say that. Okay, so let's see what else. We've got a couple of minutes. So let's finish off with some words of wisdom for the change. You know, I was going to talk about the EFF and the big press conference that they had. And in the press conference, very briefly, they never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. Right? To talk about white monopoly capital. Hey, it's always there. And so this whole thing, this virus thing and opening the economy and all that is about white. No, you must keep it closed. Never mind when the whole white monopoly economy collapses. It's okay. And of course, the favorite whipping boy is Pravin Gordhan. Jamadas, he calls him. Pravin Gordhan is a whipping boy. And then they talk about nationalizing private hospitals. And then they demand that the schools must be closed. Maybe there's a lot of sense in that because they say that what's the point of having social distancing within the school area when outside the children are coming in taxis and holding hands and socializing already before they come to school? Good point. And then he makes this very profound pronouncement. Stay at home. Do not go out. The government should not lift the lockdown. The lockdown, stay at home. Never mind you are going to be poor. Never mind you're starving. At least you will die at home in dignity with your boots on. That's what Julius Malema said. You will die at home with dignity with your boots on. That's, as the Americans say, is rich. Considering that this Mota is probably wearing some Gucci boots or something like that and his pantry is full of groceries and so on. So it's very nice to say, it's better to die at home in dignity with your boots on. And very quickly, under this lockdown, Becky Trele said that 243,146 people have been arrested for contravening the rules. 243,146 arrested. What a good job from the police. Right. One small question, Mr. Trele. How many people are in Tronk for state capture up to now? You got any figures about that? And then I was wanted to talk about the schools also. On Monday, it is expected that 419,000 children will go back to school. 419,000. That's a very large number. But it may not happen. All kinds of things are happening over this weekend. Unions are talking about it. Teachers who are supposed to have been there already, some of them, half of them haven't pitched up. Some schools have only got 20% of the teachers who are supposed to be briefed on what's going to be happening. So that is another big conundrum, a big problem they're carrying on about whether the schools are going to open, whether the parents are going to send the children to school. It's quite a dilemma, actually, for many parents, because some of the children only get their meal, the meal that is provided by the school. So, there are a lot of things to consider there. So, the last thing I'm going to be talking about now, as I promised, is some words of wisdom. And it's from a wonderful book that was given to me by a mota from Castiles, full of lovely sayings and so on. And I found this one to be particularly relevant. Lovely message here. A farmer sold a pound of butter to the baker. One day, the baker decided to weigh the butter to see if he was getting a pound. And he found that he was not. First, pounds, we say kilos now, but those days, this was silver. So one day, the baker decided to weigh the butter to see if it was getting a pound, if he was getting a pound, and he found that he was not. This angered him, and he took the farmer to court. The judge asked the farmer if he was using any measure. The farmer replied, Your Honor, I am primitive. I don't have a proper measure. But I do have a scale. The judge asked, Then how do you weigh the butter? The farmer replied, Your Honor, long before the baker started buying butter from me, I have been buying a pound loaf of bread from him. Every day when the baker brings the bread, I put it on the scale and give him the same weight in butter. If anyone is to be blamed, it is the baker. Wow, what a wonderful story, eh? What is the moral of the story? We get back in life what we give to others. Whenever you take an action, ask yourself this question. Am I giving fair value for the wages or money I hope to make? There you are. Something to think about. And with that, this is A.B. Dauji bidding you all Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.